Welcome to episode 153 with Rachel Womack. I like to sing your song. Because when we were playing our show together at the Ryman, it was... I like to sing it in a big, like, Broadway style.
Yes, I know.
Love can do. It's a good one, though, but I like to sing it. And a little bit, I wanted to sing it with you, but it's so good.
You know what you should have.
You know what I did during the show? Because whenever you're listening to this, here's the deal with Rachel. She played you may be listening to 10 years from now. I don't know. This is probably in the archives, you think, of the Library of Congress?
It could be.
Okay. So back at the beginning of 2019, I played and I put together a big charity show called it's my band, The Raging Idiots, the Million Dollar Show. And you came in, and the rule for the new artist, which you're considered a brand new artist.
Yeah.
What, do you remember the rule? You know what the restraints I put on new artists were? With song
no.
selection? It was, you can do one original.
But and one cover.
You have to do one
yeah,
cover.
Yeah, yeah,
Not two originals, because you're too new.
I didn't know it was a restraint, so okay, cool.
Or maybe it was...
I was glad you asked for that, so...
So what you were going to do is you were going to do Damage first. Play me a little bit of Damage. This song I'm singing, this is a good one for me. I like to sing this one.
Oh, love can do.
Yeah.
Love can do. Love can do. Someday.
So I don't know why, but we went to practice the day before and you were playing this first.
Yes.
And you were doing Sit on the Dock of the Bay second.
Yes.
And I was like, don't do that. I know it's second one slow, but you're going to have the crowd like standing up for you. You got to play Damage second. And I switched it up, and then you played it, and then what happened? They freaking went crazy.
That was amazing.
They went crazy.
You're right. You're right. It was pretty amazing.
I got to pick five artists at the beginning of this year for my class of 2019, and I did pick you. I put you in my class, which means we do stuff like this.
I know. I'm so thankful.
Late at night for me.
I know. We're here in the afternoon.
No, it's 6 p.m. This
is
evening. Maybe it's afternoon for you.
This is my afternoon.
It's evening for me. Because I'm
I don't know what time you go to bed. But
8 or 8:30.
Oh, my gosh, Bobby.
I have to wake up at 3:30. It used to be 3.
Are you serious? You wake up at 3:30?
Yeah, it used to be 3. Until recently, it was 3. 8. But you got to understand, Rachel, I have to be on the air and ready to go at 5. So, and I'm not a morning person.
Wow.
In any way.
Mm-hmm.
You morning person?
I'm the happiest in the mornings.
Really?
Yes. But I like to sleep in.
Me
so,
too.
And I'm riding every day. So, you know, my day starts at like 11 for a ride, which is like
11.
Really awesome.
Would you time out from like 11 to 3, 11 to 4?
Yeah, 4 or 5. It just depends on like what kind of demo we're doing. You know, sometimes I like to do a lot of background vocals and that'll take a couple hours, but if it's something a little bit more simple, we can get done earlier.
Rachel and I we spent a little bit of time talking about interviews and how to be interviewed. And did you feel like you learned anything?
Yes, I learned a lot.
Do you think, because we sat down in the living room just for a bit of time.
I'm glad you asked that.
You know what? I'll tell you some hacks I taught her. Because I come from the land of not only am I interviewing everyone, from
yes.
the biggest artists to brand new artists that I really like their music. And I don't have to interview everyone because there are big artists that I say no to all the time. There are new artists that people will go, why would you put them on?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, because I love their music, right? And so I interview everyone and I also am interviewed all the time.
Yes.
Because I'm also not, I'm just not an interview radio guy. I also do other things. People want to interview me for their shows.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was telling her, I said, sometimes about once or twice in an interview, tell them that's a really good question.
That's a great question.
you'll make them feel like, wow, she really thinks I'm special at interviewing.
I've never been asked that before.
Yeah.
Honestly, genuinely, mm-hmm. I do want to say that to people sometimes, and I think it and I don't say it out loud. So I think I'm glad you pointed that out because
she's doing it right now. See,
people ask me some very intriguing questions sometimes, and I'm like, okay, I can get into this. Thank you for asking me. So that's great advice.
And then what do you
it's a
not?
Great tool.
What do you not? Oh, she's using my words back.
I don't.
I told her. I said, I'm not teaching you how to do every interview. I'm just
These
giving
are
you tools. Some
tools. Yeah. These are tools, Rachel. You said not to say. I get that question all the time.
I get when because there are some questions you just have to ask in an interview,
mm-hmm.
and you don't want to. But you feel like if you don't, there's part of your audience that is new to whomever. For example, Dan and Shay. I've known them since the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times where I have to be like, hey, so wait, how'd you guys get together again?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not doing it for me, but I'm doing it for the people listening. And they wouldn't do this to me at this point, but they could easily be like, oh man, we get asked it all the time. And yeah, all of a sudden you're like, I know.
Yeah.
I really, like, I know you get asked this all the time, but throw me a bone, just answer the freaking question.
Yeah. Well, that's a basic, great question that a lot of people might not know. So
you don't,
it's very informational.
You don't say.
Oh, I get that.
I get asked
all the time.
What
quit
question,
it.
What question do you get asked all the time?
I get asked if I am Leanne Womack's daughter.
Rachel Womack, Leanne Womack.
Yeah. A lot of people, I don't know, they don't know our names are spelled differently, but I've never met Leanne Womack.
You haven't?
I've never met her. I would love to meet her and just tell her that everyone thinks I'm her daughter, but she does have a daughter who's in country music, Aubrey Sellers, who I'm sure is fantastic, but Leanne Womack and I get our hair done at the same place, so
yeah, all,
that's
the,
pretty great.
Right, Mike?
Is that my anecdote? Yes.
Great answer.
Right. That's good. That's funny.
But
that's
that weird. Is I am like pretty honored that we get our hair done at the same place, and her hair always looks amazing, so I trust mine hopefully will too.
How much does the haircut cost for you, or style?
More than it is in Alabama.
Yeah?
Yeah. But I wonder, like, I don't know, if Leanne, like, has to do, because I feel like she has a lot of different colors too, like over time. So
that's not the question I asked. How much is a haircut? Like a hairstyle?
Like an actual cut?
I'll go first. My style, if I go in, it's like $45.
No.
And then I'm close with, it's probably more for you, and I'm close with my person.
Yeah,
so I tip
the
grab out of her.
I get like color too.
So it's like 200?
So I don't think, yeah, I mean under, a little under 200, but it also depends if I'm doing like a partial or a full color.
How often do you do a color?
It depends. I'm going darker right now. So basically my curl is like growing out my natural hair color. It's kind of like people doing ombre a little bit, but she grows out my natural hair color and also colors the top of my head the natural hair color. So it's like it can grow out now and I don't have to get it colored as much. Because it's hard when you're like on radio tour and touring. Like you can't just go and get your hair done all the time. So
Amen.
They work with me.
Listen, I can't get mine done all the time. I have my stylist on
mm-hmm.
all the time. Like if you get like tomorrow, I'm going because I was like,
yeah,
I gotta go shoot American Idol next
How
week.
Often do you get your hair done?
More than I probably should, but anytime I have to go back on camera, I make it fresh. I try to make the top look fresh.
Yeah,
the top needs to look a little bit
yeah.
long.
Yes.
But I can't have my neck all gross if I'm on TV.
So yeah,
sometimes a week and a half, sometimes a month and a half. But if I'm going,
see, that's how I, yes, well, mine
ombre,
would never
though.
Be a week and a half, but yeah, I feel you. Mine's probably, okay, they say like for color, you go in like every 6 or 8 weeks,
yeah.
But I probably wait longer, so.
Let me play some of these songs real quick. Let's
okay.
do, this is Rachel Womack. This is a song that we just talked about. This is called Damage. Go ahead and hit that song again. All right, tell me about this song.
Well, when I moved to Nashville from Muscle Shoals, I didn't have a deal, and so I had to get a job. And I didn't know anybody in Nashville, hardly, other than my friend who worked at this bar in Green Hills, and he got me a job working with him. And I worked as a bartender. And I'd never been a bartender before. And I worked there for a year. And I was a pretty crappy bartender.
You were? Why?
Well, I'm not. I have never been good at making drinks. So, like, martinis are really difficult. Margaritas are difficult. But the good thing was it was a hotel bar. So a lot of people just wanted, like, gin and tonic or whiskey and coke or whatever. But despite not being the quickest at making drinks, the nights that were like really slow and I would have one or two people come and just sit with me for like 3 or 4 hours, I would feel like I was a therapist to people a lot. And I would just hear a lot of stories that I didn't expect people to open up and tell me. And it made me feel really good because I felt like people told me a lot of things that they probably hadn't shared with like friends or family in years, things that you just kind of bottle up over time. And, it was really cool because I got to share stories too. And I just felt like we're not all that different. And damage just came, the next day after writing, with Mr. Tom Douglas and David Hodges, and I just told him about me bartending and hearing some of these stories, and I was like, I don't really know what I'm doing, but you know, I feel like a lot of people really need to be listened to, and it's really important for us, and I'm glad that I was able to be a bartender so I could listen to people and just be there for people. And I felt like in my life before being a bartender, I was not a really great listener. And I feel like I wasn't, honestly, like, it made me a better friend just being a bartender, because I don't know. The funny thing is, I wasn't able to leave, you know, when people telling me stories. But I think that was like really, really important that I, you know, had to be there. And I was like, this is really important what I'm doing. Because, you know, they say like your bartender and your hairdresser or whatever, they are your therapist. And it was really awesome. I'm thankful that my first single came from a job that I never thought I would have.
It's funny that you talk about being a bartender making you a better friend. I feel like being a waiter made me a better human.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as you have to depend on other people,
yeah,
and hopefully you have to, you know, make your means through their kindness,
yeah,
it makes you such a just a better person.
Yeah.
And treat people differently, and, yeah, and treat your, you know, and it's a metaphor, but treat your waiters different. You treat, mm-hmm, everybody different.
Oh yeah. I mean, I tip my bartenders, you know?
Yeah. Because you know that, because your bartender is having to pay their rent, mm-hmm, based on your tips.
Yeah. I wouldn't have been able to live in Nashville if I, you know, wouldn't have had a job. And I'm thankful, though, that that was the job. I mean, not only because I got my first single, but like you said, like, I just feel like it made my heart better and made me, like, not cut people off in conversation when they're trying to talk about something deep or important, because a lot of times I'd be like, I gotta, you know, do whatever. And I feel like I give people more of my time now.
Yeah, those early jobs, like, I worked at Hobby Lobby for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love Hobby Lobby.
Yeah. And then my name tag said Hobby Lobby Bobby. Yeah, I got made fun of a lot.
Your song,
that.
Yes. Yeah,
that's right. That's where that song came from. We both wrote songs based on our past.
I love that. Heck yeah. That made us better people.
Absolutely.
So we are thankful for them.
Let me throw a commercial real quick.
The world is full of sounds that warn you of danger. Like, if you get a little too close to a rattlesnake, you're the ch-ch-ch-ch. But in the digital world, if your personal information is in danger, there is no ch-ch-ch-ch to let you know that you might be in trouble. The good thing is that LifeLock has added the power of Norton Security to see more cyber threats. Whether it's potential threats to your identity, like your personal information for sale on the dark web, or threats to your devices, like malware or emerging viruses, if you have a problem, their agents will work to fix it. Of course, no one can stop every cyber threat or prevent all identity theft or monitor transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock with Norton can detect a wide range of threats that could sneak up on you. Join now and get 10% off your first year. Just go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and enter the promo code BONES. 1-800-LIFELOCK, enter the promo code BONES for 10% off at LifeLock.com. I love LifeLock. I have used LifeLock. They've helped me so many times. LifeLock.com.
All right, so how about we do, you know what song I like? And I think I put this on my Insta story a long time ago. It's Closure.
It's a good, yeah, one.
Yeah, play some Closure.
Yeah.
Any story behind this one?
I wrote this with Mr. Johnny Price. And in Nashville, we do a lot of like three-way writes. And this was just the two of us. And this was probably my longest write I've ever had in my life. I think we wrote from 11 a.m. to probably 7 at night. And then Johnny wanted to come back the next day and continue to rework the vocals. And my voice was like just shot.
From singing?
And yeah. And Yeah, because after singing like 8 hours straight, and at that point I hadn't had much vocal coaching either, so I didn't really know how to warm up, and I just like torched my voice that day. And I came back and I was like pissed, because I was like, my voice is so tired. I was like, Johnny, come on. And it ended up being one of my favorite songs I've ever written. And I'm so thankful that he was as conscious and intentional about getting the right vocal on the demo, because when I went in the studio with Dan, I just felt like I knew exactly what it was supposed to be like. So it was worth every second. And he's brilliant.
There's a Bobby cast with Dan Huff, which we did a year and a half ago.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm a big Dan Huff fan, because even when he played, he was a player.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has Michael Jackson stories, and he has Paula Abdul stories, and now he produces the coolest stuff. But I asked him a long time ago, I said, hey, who is it that you work with now that's like any good that I'd never heard of?
Mm-hmm.
He said your freaking name. He said Rachel Wombach.
Well, I love Dan. And Closure was one of Dan's favorites, I feel like, that we did on that EP. And he's the best, man.
He's the nicest guy. He'll call and leave me, not voicemail, he'll leave me voice text. He's like, hey, Bobby, hey, man, I just watched it. It was so great. You did this.
I know.
He's the nicest guy.
Well, he is the first way I ever heard about you, because we went in to the studio, and he actually had to push it back a little bit later, and I didn't know why, but I went in with him later, and he was like, yeah, sorry, I had to, you know, push this back. I just did this interview with Bobby Bones. And I was like, oh yeah, I've heard of him. And he was like, oh, he's awesome. And he said, I asked him, I was like, you know, do you like interviewing after all this time? Like, how was it with Bobby? And he said, it was amazing, because he had my tracks that I'd done when I was a teenager pulled up. And it was just like a really cool experience, because he had all the knowledge and just made me feel so welcomed. And I was like, okay, Bobby's cool. Bobby's cool.
I was also just a huge fan, you know?
Well, me too. And yeah. The coolest, best part about Dan, other than him being a brilliant musician, producer, is that he is one of my favorite humans ever. And even though he has like the most amazing, like just amazing repertoire of all the things he's done on these amazing projects, he's humble, like genuinely humble and genuinely kind. And it's just awesome to work with someone like that. 'Cause I was intimidated going in with my first producer ever. And I was like, crap, this guy's going to be like, it's my way or the highway. You know, I've done all this stuff. And he's truly collaborative and just made me feel like my ideas are just as valid as his. And I don't know, that's just a really good feeling for someone like me who's young and inexperienced, and he just made me feel important.
If you listen to the Dan Huff Bobby cast, it's back a few episodes, but there's a story he tells about being in an airport and hearing a guitar lick. And he's like, man, it's really good. It's a Paula Abdul song. He's like, it's a good. And his brother's like, yeah, that's you, dummy. Because when he played it, he didn't play it with Paula Abdul.
Would.
He just went in the studio and played it, reading off piece of paper. And then once
the list goes on and on.
So, yeah. So, shout out, Dan, if you're listening to this.
I love you, Dan.
You're from Muscle Shoals, Alabama?
Yes.
Yeah, what's that? Tell me about you growing up.
Well, Muscle Shoals is like 2 hours south of Nashville. And
is that close?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I can go home heck in a day or just spend a weekend at home and come back. I'm pretty spoiled. But I will say, you know, the Muscle Shoals music history is just very vast and very amazing as far as its blues history. And so you would think that I would be like some blues guitar player, but actually my main instrument in the high school marching band was the marimba, and oversized xylophone.
Oh, that's what that's called?
It's a marimba.
How do you get into doing the marimba the first time?
Well, I started in middle school band, and I remember being in the middle school band playing the snare drum, because I don't know, I just liked the percussive instruments. And we watched the high school players do this concert one night, and I saw for their like end of the show, they had a bunch of, it was marimbas and vibraphones and xylophones. Sorry if I bore you.
Are those all xylophone? Like, is a, what's it called? A vibraphone? Is that kind of a xylophone?
Yeah. So it's a xylophone with a pedal, and it's like a metal instrument. And anyway, they did this really cool song, and everyone was just performing so well and like smiling, and it just sounded really cool and unique. And I was like, I want to do that one day. And so in high school, I tried out for the marimba and started playing in this thing called percussion ensemble, and which taught me a lot of work ethic, and we competed. And
did you already play piano though?
I played piano. My mom made me take lessons when I was 6 years old, and she said, you need to take 4 years of lessons and then you can do whatever you want. And I'm thankful that she did, because now I get to play piano as part of my shows.
Did you keep playing piano the whole time? So after 10 years old, you stay on the piano?
Yeah. So I hated lessons with like a burning passion, which I guess any little kid, you know, they don't like to sit down forever. But I played for 4 years, learned some great theory, I feel like, and learned how to read music. And then in middle school, at like 11 and 12, I was listening to Sarah Bareilles and Adele, who were very piano-driven artists at the time. And it was something that I was like, I could learn these songs on piano. So I started learning. I learned Someone Like You on the piano. And I learned Gravity by Sarah Bareilles. And I just fell in love with figuring out how different songs just come together on the piano keys and how I could play them. And that was what birthed songwriting for me, because I just started writing my own music and put chords together, and I just loved the way the piano sounded. And so it just kind of went from there. I just kept on writing in middle school and high school.
Were you like King Dingling of music in school? Like in college, were they like, she's the best, like big fish, no, small pond type thing?
No, but I was kind of an attention hog, I feel like. I always, like, just wanted to perform. Like, that's all I've wanted to do literally my whole life is perform. And my parents say that at family gatherings when I was really little, at my grandparents, they had this little blue stool in the middle of the room. And I would get on top of the little blue stool and I would say, everybody sing it with me. And I just wanted like to perform for whoever. And like that carried in middle school and high school. For our graduating class, I wrote a song for our graduating class and performed it at graduation.
You did.
I did. And like now I'm like, that's so nerdy, but everybody said that they liked it. And like, you know, everybody was crying, but
what was it called?
It was called Thanks for the Memories. It was so lame, but it was really fun, and it's a sweet memory now. But yeah, I love performing out, and I was songwriting a whole lot in high school and just working on my craft.
My high school graduation, I wrote a poem and read it out loud
Stop.
Okay, but that is, you sang a song. It's the same thing. Like, I wrote a big poem.
No, I love that.
Okay, well, I love the fact that you played a song.
Well, thanks.
I look back at my poem. I think I have it here in my house somewhere. And I was like, how cheesy is this? But you know what?
I know.
It should be. We should always look back at the work we created a long time ago and think, oh, that kind of sucks. Because as long as it still sucks, it means
so
we
true.
Are it means we're moving
growing.
Forward.
We're growing.
And so it's okay to feel that way.
Well, mine, I always talk about food in my songs. I can't remember. I think we talked about French fries in the song, but
thanks for the memory.
I know.
I'll miss all you guys.
It was something like us sharing French fries or whatever, you know.
You were Miss University of North Alabama?
Yes, I was.
You're a pageant girl.
No, I wouldn't say I was a pageant girl.
You're a pageant girl.
Well, I guess I was. I just feel like I wasn't. But I started, I didn't grow up doing pageants.
There's nothing wrong with being a pageant.
I know. I'm just saying most girls in the pageant that competed with me would say, it's not like negative or positive, that I just really wasn't a pageant girl. And like in high school, I feel like I maybe did one pageant in high school.
Did you win?
No.
Do you know I judged Miss America this year? This last time?
Yes.
I was one of the freaking judges.
I know.
And I had control. It was crazy.
How did you feel?
Like I had too much power, to be honest
with
you. Because what they did is they cut it from, they cut it to like the top 24 and they pulled us in a room. It was me, Randy Jackson from American Idol. Remember him?
Yeah, I love Randy.
Carrie-Anne. It was, oh, Carrie-Anne was the host. She wasn't a judge.
Yeah, she was the host.
So anyway, I'm judging and there are like five of us. And I'm like writing scores down, and the freaking girl that I picked won. It's crazy.
I
had too much power. We had to watch. Yeah. We had to watch videos. My point was, there's a lot that goes into that.
There's a lot, and I went into competing for Miss University of North Alabama because I wanted to pay for my college, and
it is one scholarship.
Of the primary things.
Absolutely.
Is it's a scholarship pageant. And so, and me again, wanting to perform, I knew that there was a talent portion and I knew that I had a unique instrument.
Would you play
the marimba?
I really
played
it. Oh my goodness.
Yes.
I thought you played piano and sing.
No. So what I did was I played the marimba and I had a lapel mic and I sang. And so when I was competing for Miss UNA, I played Flashdance, What a Feeling by Irene Cara.
Oh, what a feeling.
What a feeling.
Yeah. Do, 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 do. So you would sing that, oh, what a feeling.
Yes, yes. And I had my high school band director arrange like a version of that for me to play on marimba. And I learned it, and it was so freaking fun. Like, I loved it. And everyone else was like, oh my gosh, this is so different. And I won talent at Miss UNA and ended up winning the whole thing. And I went and competed at Miss Alabama. And I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And all these girls are so experienced. And I learned how to walk in heels, run in heels. But it was really cool because playing and doing my talent for that large of an audience, I feel like prepared me even for something like, you know, playing on your $1 million show. Like, just, it was another practice for me for playing for bigger audiences, and it was really fun.
Yeah, that's funny. Could you still play marimba?
I think I can, yeah. I played it at a radio station, actually, on radio tour. They heard that I played marimba and brought the marimba from their high school in that area. And
that's a funny bit. Who, do you remember what show it was? I give him a shout out because it's a funny bit.
It was in Florida. They were literally so, so sweet and brought like mallets and everything. And I played the Irene Cara. And it was just, it was awesome. Like standing of all whatever 15 listeners
though,
that were in there.
Oh, it wasn't on the air.
Well, it was on the air, but everyone in the room,
okay,
like they had some listeners come in, and it was just so fun. I thought that was so thoughtful, like, of them to bring in the marimba. Cause normally, you know, I'm just playing piano or not playing at all.
Just playing piano.
So,
so you're playing marimba. If you pull that out on stage at some point, like you're playing a show, people would lose their crap, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be funny?
If I'm telling you.
Oh, what a feeling. Oh, what a feeling.
Let me tell you, Bobby. Okay. One day, if I can headline a show.
Go ahead. You will at some point.
My encore would be the marimba. And I would do like three songs. Just so it could be like
three's
a
over
thing.
You don't want to do three. You just want to do one.
No.
You want to go and be like, you want to roll it out. What you want to do is, I'm going to go ahead and set your
when you see
up.
It one day, you're going to want three songs.
But here's what you do. Ready, Rachel?
Yes.
I'm going to tell you how to play the marimba because I've never even seen one.
Okay.
In your next
one. You know. You know it if you saw it.
This is what I would do. I would roll it out and I'd be like, what is, if I'm being you right now.
Oh, you're me. Mm-hmm.
What is this? what, this like a big old xylophone?
Mm-hmm.
I'm supposed to like hit this thing, and you go, bing. And you're like, huh, bing, bing. Well, this is crazy. And then you look back at your guys and go, does anyone know how to work this thing? Is it plugged in? At this point, everyone's like, ah,
oh, crap.
She's got a huge xylophone. This is funny. Yeah. You go, bing, 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 bing. Huh. Well, I guess I can try it.
Pours out the four mallets.
Then, yeah, and it's like, oh, what a fit. And you crush it. And the crowd's like, oh, my God. Because I do it.
That would be the debut.
It would be hilarious. People would be shocked, and you would crush it. Because
okay,
you would
put, I'm going to do it.
You would tilt them a certain way of them rooting for you, going, oh, we obviously aren't familiar with this instrument either.
Right.
And they're like, oh, this is going to be. Then when you crush it, they go the whole different direction, and they're so moved by it, they'll give you a standing O. I'm telling you.
Okay. We're going to do it. It's my dream. I've always wanted to do it, but it's definitely hard to transport.
Oh, it seems like it's a bit. I do a bit on my comedy shows where if we can, and if Brandon Ray's opening for me. Do you know Brandon Ray?
Yeah, love him.
Love him. And he's in the crowd. We did this in Michigan, and so I'll be like, hey, listen, I like to give new artists a shot. Is there anybody in the crowd who plays guitar? And so a few people raise their hand, and I'll be like, what about you? And then it's Brandon who I've planted in the crowd.
Oh,
and then Brandon will walk out and be like, what's your name, man? I go, man, it's Jimmy. I'm like, Jimmy, you ever play for a crowd this big? Because there'd be a couple thousand people there. No. Just give it a shot, Jimmy. And then he takes, same thing, right? He goes, clunk, clunk, clunk. And I'm like, dude, just take a breath. And then he'll play and I'll go, and then he just crushes it.
Yes.
And the crowd's gone from just rooting for him with they all their might. To, and then they're all like, ah!
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I love that.
So so you've told me this story before, but I think it's such an interesting story. So you're playing in one of those spinning restaurants in Alabama.
Yes.
Are you just playing at dinner or something, like trying to make a few bucks for college or what?
Yeah. So this had become at this point kind of a regular gig for me.
In Alabama.
Uh-huh. In Muscle
Shoals. Let me rewind. Did you win Miss Alabama?
No.
Where'd you place?
I didn't make top 10, but I did win. So I don't know what place I did, if you're not top 10 or whatever.
Okay.
But I did win Miss Congeniality.
Oh, yeah?
And I won talent overall, which was cool.
You got two things and you didn't even finish the top 10?
Nope.
Kind of garbage.
It's weird like that. It's weird. You never know.
I should have been judging this one.
Well, my parents were like, after I won the preliminary talent, my parents were like, oh, she's top 10. She's top 10. I'm like, y'all, do not get excited because I didn't make top 10. But I did get enough scholarship money to pay for college. And that was my goal.
That's cool.
And I learned a lot of really wonderful things along the way, how to volunteer, like things that I just didn't realize went along with the pageant. So anyway,
let's talk about you playing in the rotating restaurant.
Yes. So the restaurant is in Florence, Alabama, which I'll educate you a little bit. Muscle Shoals and Florence, Alabama are separated just by this bridge. So Muscle Shoals is where I grew up. Florence is where the rotating restaurant is and where the University of North Alabama is. They're like in the same area. And it had become like my regular thing because I would sub in for my friend, Mr. Harvey Thompson Jr., who's like the most fabulous piano player. And he just had me fill in for him when he couldn't make it. And he was playing a lot of gigs, so I'd just fill in for him a lot. And it's a rotating restaurant, which means like the tables are moving on the outside, but I would be stationary. So people would come by me and like hear me like really loud and close, and then they'd move away and they like couldn't hear me for a while. And I was like, okay, cool. But it's kind of nice for people that want to have a nice dinner because you can have time to talk and then you can come back around and listen to music. So one night I noticed this guy at the bar and I had no idea who he was, but I knew he was paying attention to my music. And so I always try to cater to whoever that is. And, you know, if they want to ask me, you know, to play something for him, I'll try to play a cover. And he I felt like he was just really appreciating the music. And then I saw him go over to his table, and so I didn't see him for a while. And then at the end of the night, he comes up to me again, and he gives me his card, and he says, hey, I'm Jim, I'm from Sony Music in Nashville. And I was a senior in high school, so I was 17. And literally thought he was about to kidnap me. Like, I'm like, this is sketchy. I don't know. He's not, definitely not who he says he is. And anyway, but I was like, thank you so much, you know, for liking my music. And he was like, you know, let me know if you'd ever like to talk about, you know, your songwriting career and maybe if you'd be interested in moving to Nashville. I'd love to talk to your parents because I'm like just a kid. And so anyway, I took the card home and my parents were like, no, this is legit Sony Nashville. And so my dad and I went to Nashville, first time for me, and we met with Jim and just talked about what it would be like to songwrite. And we actually looked out his window and saw like all of Music Row. And he was like, yeah, everyone goes just about every day to write in these little houses out there. And I was like, why would they do that? I don't even understand why everybody, like, it was so foreign to me, the whole thing. And, so we even, you know, talked about moving to Nashville instead of going to college, like what that would be like. And, so we had a great meeting, but I ended up, you know, knowing in my gut that I wanted to go, get a degree because that's something, you know, nobody can ever take away from me. And I am really glad that I got one because it was cool, you know, growing up in my hometown and then performing out in my hometown. I had a lot of support and I would play at a lot of different restaurants, and that would turn into me playing at people's business meetings and playing at people's weddings and just parties and like playing in people's barns, like just literally so much fun. And that would be like basically helping me pay rent as well in college. And worked on my craft as a songwriter. And I'm thankful, you know, everybody's path is different, but I'm thankful that I spent my, you know, 4 years of college there developing, because I felt like I was able to just really focus on me. And here, you know, there's so many artists, I feel like you can just feel like you're getting lost. And I really felt like I could just completely be myself. And so then I graduated college, and I remember I was running on the treadmill and I had this thought in my head, and it was just like, text Jim now and invite him to a show. And so I was like, okay, I guess I'll invite him, because I felt like that was kind of bold to do. But I invited him, and he said, this is like June 2016, and he says,
like 4 years later.
Yeah,
four
yeah,
and a half years later.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And so he says, it's really crazy here at CMA Fest in Nashville, and that's just like nuts for us. So would you be willing to just come play for our A&R team and just bring your piano and do your new songs here? And I was like, yeah, of course. And I didn't realize how cool that was, like, to have that opportunity. But it was amazing having known him, for the several years that I had, and just asking him questions along the way. I wasn't like super nervous to play for them. And so I just like went and played like four songs for them and sang my heart out. And Taylor Lindsay on their team was just like, you need to move here now. And I was like, well, y'all aren't offering a deal, so I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And within 2 weeks, I had contacted my friend who was bartending in Green Hills and had known a girl who was living in Madison. I just lived in a room in her house, and moved to Nashville 2 weeks later, and can't believe it.
And now you have a deal with
Sony RCA. And as soon as I got to Nashville, I was bartending every night and songwriting every day. And I'm thankful for that year of songwriting, because I met so many people. I was thankful and blessed to be in a lot of really just rooms with really brilliant people, and ended up signing with them. I didn't know they were just as serious about signing me as an artist. Like, I thought they loved me as a songwriter, but I was surprised, like, about a year into moving, Jim said, hey, we want to schedule a meeting and you just play us some of the new songs you've been writing in town. And I was like, okay, let's do it. And at the end of that meeting, they offered me a developmental deal. And I was just blown away, because I wasn't expecting that at all. And I mean, I guess I was very naive to how the industry works. So they probably said words that I didn't realize meant that they were wanting to sign me. But I was just so honored. And, now I have an EP out, and Damage just went to radio, and I'm just really thankful. It's a pretty amazing story.
It's crazy that you're just playing at a little restaurant.
I know. You would never know.
And then it doesn't work out the first time, but then it kind of works out the second time, and in the end, it all kind of worked out.
It was really crazy, and very, like, a lot of people that I've met while I was on radio tour, we've just talked about how amazing it is that everybody has just a break, and like whatever your break is, like it's just someone really, really helping you out and seeing some potential in you. And I'm just thankful that I was playing that night at that restaurant, or else we would have never met and my life could be totally different. So it's pretty amazing.
That's the title of this podcast. It's Rachel Womack, parentheses, and how she was discovered playing in a rotating restaurant. Make that. People will click on that. Have you seen the, you have Netflix?
Yes, I love Netflix.
Have you watched the Firefest documentary yet?
No, I don't know what that is.
Oh man, you should watch it.
Okay.
It's, there was a big festival 2 years ago. They were planning in the Bahamas, and how this dude actually screwed a bunch of people out of their money. And he's in jail now.
Okay.
And it's good. You should watch it.
Okay. It's interesting.
FYR. Yeah, I remember the news when it happened. It's kind of the thing everybody's talking about right now.
Yeah.
And I want you to be a part of everybody. And I want you to be able to
talk. Thank you. Yeah, okay, yeah. Cool.
So there's one on Hulu and there's one on Netflix. You have Hulu?
Yes.
Do you watch anything on Hulu?
Well, I missed The Bachelor this week. So I'm going to be watching that on... Oh, crap. I was supposed to watch... Yeah. I was supposed to watch that tonight, but hopefully I can make it in time. Because I think it's on at 7 tonight on Hulu.
Okay, I'll get you out of here.
No, you're fine. Oh my gosh, you're so fine. But
what do you watch on Netflix?
So right now, I've been having bad dreams after watching You. Have you heard of it?
I watched the first episode. Now,
bro, I just finished the season, so.
Mike, have you seen it?
I haven't heard of it. I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, so I watched the first episode of You. And a bit, I thought it was a little too creepy for me. Because it's about, what I've seen, I don't want you to spoil it for me, but...
I will not spoil it.
It's about this dude, by the way, really good looking dude.
Did you watch Gossip Girl?
No.
He's on Gossip Girl too.
Oh, he's a little too good looking for me. I get a little resentful.
I don't think he's that cute.
You don't?
No.
Oh, I think he's like super cute. I think he's super cute, right?
Yeah.
So
I think he's okay, but...
And he works at a bookstore.
Yeah, which is so cute. That is cute, you know?
And then goes in and gets a book, and he's like, oh, I think I'll hit on her. And then he like stalks her and like finds everything about her. And that's all
yes.
I know.
Because that's they tell all that in episode one.
And episode one's all I've watched. But I didn't know if I wanted to go to episode two or not.
I know. Same. So I can't I can't watch like thriller stuff by myself normally. And I don't watch scary movies like at all. And this weekend we did like this last minute random show with Brett Young opening up for him in Missouri. And so on the way to and from the show, it was a 7-hour drive. I binged the show with my manager who had seen the whole show. So she was rewatching it with me. And it is crazy.
Should I watch it?
I think you should definitely watch it. No, it's... Well, I just have very vivid dreams at night.
Me too. I tried to read Twilight and I couldn't because I got nightmares.
That's great.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I didn't sleep well last night. Like, I'm really tired today because I dreamed about him stalking me last night. I know. No, it's bad. But the show is so good. And it's... I love it because... There's so many twists, like, the whole time. And if I don't know if you've seen, like, a lot of the feed on, like, Twitter or whatever.
I try to avoid anything I'm currently watching.
Well, I haven't seen the feed, but my bestie is on top of all feed. And she was saying that a lot of people like him because of some of the things he does.
Well, don't spoil it for me or my listeners.
So he's like the protagonist, antagonist at the same time.
Yeah, because in episode one, he has a great relationship with the kid. And next
he does.
And he's like,
and he continues that. I'll tell you that. Yeah.
It's almost like, you ever watch Dexter?
He has some great side. No.
So Dexter is a serial killer.
I know. And I didn't want to watch that.
Oh, it's such a good show. And you're like, oh, man, I want to root against him. But he's also like a good dude.
I know. See, that's, well, and you, I'm not going to spoil it.
Okay. Don't
but
spoil that for me.
But you learn why, you know, somewhat why he does the things he does.
Okay. Like 50 Shades of Grey. You ever read that or watch that?
No.
I read it. And the first one. Yeah, I read it. The movie was weird.
I never saw either of them.
I read
the new
it
one or the old one.
I feel like I have to stay up on all big things so I can talk about
yes.
it.
Yes.
And then I lost a bet on the show where we all drew, and I lost. I had to read the book, and it was pretty good. It's fine.
Yeah.
But that thing
was
is,
it as good as the movie?
I don't remember finishing the movie.
Okay.
What I remember about the book is and how it relates is that
because he's.
There's
bad
a reason.
Too.
Yeah, there's a reason he's like. I don't know if he's bad, but yes, okay.
What,
there's a reason he's like he is,
uh-huh.
and you go, oh,
exactly. Like you have, they do a great job of developing him as a character throughout the series, and it's only 10 episodes, and so you do feel for him, but you're also like, bro, like my bestie was like. Never mind. I'm not going to give it away for you. Have to watch it though.
Okay,
watch it.
I will watch more of you. I'll give it two more episodes before I make my decision. But you have to watch.
Definitely.
Fire.
If you watch two,
you have to watch Fire.
You're
going to
watch all of them.
The documentary.
Okay. Yeah, I will. And I'll watch Dexter, but I'll watch it with somebody.
Dexter's like 8 seasons. Like it's a great show, but.
Oh dang.
Don't commit.
Yeah. This is only one season.
Don't commit
so you're
to that
like,
for me. Just watch the Fire Fest documentary. What we'll do is we get the phones in here. We'll call her and get an update on a podcast.
Okay.
So let me know after you're done with that and we'll get a recap on this podcast.
Okay.
Of the Fire Festival.
That sounds amazing.
Anything you're watching? You know what I watched on Amazon was, I'm still watching it, is Man in High Castle.
Mm-mm.
No, mm-hmm. I just started because a friend was like, you got to watch it.
Yeah.
It's like if World War II would have ended the other way,
mm-hmm.
where we got beat and Japan and Germany won, mm-hmm. America was taken over by them. Oh, but anyway.
Crap.
The idea is very interesting. The movie is a little slow.
Okay.
You ever watch Amazon? Anything on Amazon?
No. Have you ever seen The Office?
Shut your face. I watch it all the time. All the time.
So I watch it probably more than you do.
There's no way.
Yeah, I do.
Do you like Scott's Tots or no?
Okay.
Exactly.
No.
How do you not know what Scott's Tots is? So that's the episode that people can't decide if they love it or hate it. Scott's Tots is where Michael Scott tells these kids in kindergarten he's going to pay for their college.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he goes back and he's like, and they throw a big party for him. And they're like.
I love that episode just because I love every episode. And over Christmas break, I got my parents watching and they'd never seen like a for real episode. Mm-hmm. And now my dad is like binge watching The Office for the first time. And it's so fulfilling for me that I showed them, but I do like that episode, even
too.
Though like
most people say they don't, it makes them uncomfortable. I love uncomfortable. Me too.
That's
my best comedy to watch and to live.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you like the dinner party episode? Where they go over to Jan's and Michael's apartment condo.
Yes.
And
it's super uncomfortable.
The whole thing. Like she's done.
Yes.
Fish ready. It takes 3 hours. He has to sleep on the foot of the bed.
It's the best.
He shows a little TV. She breaks it. That's a good one.
Well, and see, that's like my mom at first was like, it's too uncomfortable. You know, it's too awkward. I'm like, that's the point though, mom.
Yeah,
because it gets you into your weird, you know?
I do this joke. I love uncomfortable, right? And I do this joke on my stand-up tour. I haven't done it in a bit because I wrote about it in my book, but in my second book. But I go out and I say, by the way, I recently met him, but I haven't known my biological father. He left when I was like 5 or 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I say, man, I've told this joke in so long, but it's, I got on Facebook, and you know how they do that thing where they recommend friends you should know?
Yes.
They recommended my biological father.
Stop.
I said,
That's so wrong.
I said, but I don't.
Well, what is your crowd?
Well, and they go,
they don't know if they can laugh or not.
Just wait. So they go, So I'm like, no, that's okay. It's okay. I said, listen, sorry about that. I'd like to do an impression now. And they're like, okay. I'm like, I'd like to do an impression of my biological father with me as a kid. And then I just walk off stage. And then I just stand off stage, like to the side. You can't even see me.
But
and
they laugh.
It's night by night, honestly. Sometimes they laugh, sometimes they're like.
That's so good.
But like I live for that kind of humor.
Oh, it's the best. When we can laugh at just. But that's the best thing about comedy, you know? It like just. It breaks open all barriers.
I'm a big fan of comedy where, you know, some people will get pissed because comedians will do something that they don't agree with, right? Or they'll go, that's over the line, or you shouldn't have said that. And then they go, we should boycott. I'm a big fan of letting the market decide what you should and shouldn't go to. Meaning, if someone says something and you don't agree with it, just, it doesn't have to be comedy, it can be anything. Just, even a TV show.
Yeah.
Don't watch it.
Okay.
Don't watch, let the market decide. Don't watch it. Go ahead.
Here's the big question.
Go ahead.
This is if we're real friends or not.
Okay, go ahead.
Because obviously I messed up the tots. How do you feel about Jack Black?
Jack Black?
Yes.
I mean, I used to really, really think he was funny in his heyday.
Yes.
I haven't seen him a lot lately.
I love him.
Except for kids, like the kids movies. Does he do like kids cartoons or something now?
Kung Fu Panda?
Stuff like that?
Yes.
But I really like Jack Black when he was really like in
he,
it.
He is my number two next to Steve Carell as far as... I think I like the most about Jack Black is he's really talented. Like really like...
Oh yeah, he can sing. He can write.
He can sing.
Funny. Comedic time. Until, yes, go ahead.
But he doesn't take it seriously.
Or does he take it so seriously you just don't know? That's what I would put him at. He's so good at it.
But he gives you just enough to be like, oh, wait, he's really good.
Some people are annoyed by him because he's a lot.
I love him.
Yeah, I'm not.
I love him.
I like
Nacho Libre. Very for life.
Hey, Mike D. That's, you know about
School
that one.
School of Rock. Yeah.
That's the only one I understand.
Yeah, School of Rock is good, huh?
Yeah, I just watched it, actually.
To you, who's the funniest person alive?
Oh, I love Steve Carell.
It's a fine answer. There's no wrong answer. Go ahead. Give me.
I'm trying
Steve
to think
Carell.
Of.
Do you put Jack Black at number two?
Yeah. Gosh, but I don't listen to a lot. I listen to like a lot of clean stuff as far as comedians go. So that rules out like a lot of people.
And number three,
I love Tim Hawkins. Do you know him?
Mm-hmm.
He's funny.
Christian comedian.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's funny. I listened to him while I was on radio tour, and he was really funny. He has a podcast called Potty Break, and it just was just funny. Easy listening.
I don't curse in my acts. Mm-hmm. I don't curse ever.
I only cuss in the car.
I used to. I don't curse at all anymore. Just because I'm not against it. I used to curse awesomely. I was hilarious, a cursor.
Yeah.
But then I realized I couldn't write or without writing cursing and then go, well, that doesn't work because I don't want to do that on stage. I just stopped. I limited all cursing. But some of my favorite, funniest people, my top three.
Tell me.
Number one. It's tough. I got to remember my order. I think that I'm going to see where I'd rank them because Chris Rock is up there for me.
He's
so
great.
Funny.
He's great.
Ricky Gervais.
He's great.
And I think Adam Carolla is super funny. So I would go, if I were ranking the three, I would go, because Ricky Gervais created The Office.
Yes.
You ever watched the British Office?
No.
You should.
But I heard it's great.
You should. And it takes a second because it's
I really,
it's
really want to watch it.
Turn the closed caption on because there will be things they say you don't understand.
Okay.
And they're just references
that
you won't get.
That is great to know.
But it's great. And you see how the characters were based on the American version. You see how the American characters were based on the British version.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Quickly. I'm going to go.
I didn't realize that.
Ricky Gervais first. Okay. Chris Rock second. Adam Carolla third.
That's stacked.
Those are my picks.
That's great.
Mike D, as we're about to wrap this up, do you have anything?
Yeah, I go Dave Chappelle, number one.
Okay.
Yes.
And then I love Dimitri Martin. Like, his
super
comedy
funny.
Is like
yes. His drawings are hilarious.
Right on. And then I really like John Mulaney. Like, his last two specials are probably one of my favorite comedian specials ever.
Did you watch the, what was it? Sebastian Gronkowski, whatever his name is, the new special?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Everybody says it's really funny. You like comedy, huh?
Yeah. I like to laugh.
Who doesn't like to laugh?
I love to laugh.
All right, let me run down this list real quick. Would you rather go to the mountains or the beach?
Mountains.
NFL or college football?
NFL.
Really? Even being from Alabama?
Well, my family would say college because they're like the biggest Roll Tide fans, but my boyfriend is a big Chiefs fan, so I've been trying to just, you know, support him even though they lost, but love him.
L.A. or New York? Where would you rather be?
L.A.
Would you rather read the book or watch the movie first?
Watch the movie.
Would you rather go watch Adele or Carrie Underwood?
Adele.
Pancakes or waffles?
Waffles.
Backstreet Boys or NSYNC?
Backstreet Boys.
Oh, I thought we were friends. We are not. We are not friends anymore.
Come on.
The Office or Friends?
Oh, no. Don't make me do that.
Go ahead.
The Office.
Yeah, you have to. And then finally, ballads or up-tempos? Which would you rather listen to?
Ballads.
Yeah, me too. Other than the Backstreet Boys, we're pretty right on in friendship.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. That's good to know. You would go to the mountains?
I don't care either way. I would just go to wherever. If I had a girlfriend, I'd be like, where do you want to go? All right, cool.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about either one of them. Yeah. Okay.
I love that.
We're going to end this.
Okay.
I'd like to finish it with a nice story. Put a bow on it.
Yes.
Once upon a time, I think it was maybe the summer of 2018. I was doing one of my friends had called and said, hey, would you come and perform at my show? And mm-hmm. I was like, sure. He said, would you come do a couple songs, do one of your comedy Raging Idiot songs, and you and I will perform together. And I said, that's cool, it's cool, it's cool. And it's a friend I care about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, of course. You've done things for me, I do things for you. That's how friendship works.
Yes, we and love each other.
Absolutely. So I go, and he's putting on the show, and it's at the Ryman Auditorium, and I was like, this is crazy. I'm playing the Ryman again. And I go out, and before the show, I'm doing a bunch of interviews for, and my friend's name is Darius Rucker, who you probably know as a solo artist, was in Hootie and the Blowfish. And I'm there and I'm doing interviews before. And there was this new artist that I went up to and I said, hey, how's it going? I said, I'm Bobby Bones. And she totally ignored me. I don't know if she didn't see me or maybe she doesn't remember. It was very brief. And I was like, hey. And she went to her next interview. Her name was Rachel Womack.
That must have been somebody else.
Because no. I brought it up like three
Bobby,
times.
Bobby, listen up, listeners.
Remember. Go ahead.
Bobby is...
Listen up,
listeners. Bullcrapping y'all. Because he bullcrapped me. He told me this story.
It's a true story. I don't remember lies.
He told me that I would have definitely remembered if Bobby came up to me and was like, hey, Rachel, what's up? Like,
I wasn't saying Rachel. I said, hey, Rachel Womack, I'm a big fan. Something like that. I didn't introduce myself as Bobby Bones because I don't do that. And we were doing interviews around like this half circle in a side room.
Yeah, I was there, yeah, but I didn't. You weren't there. Okay. You weren't there.
I'd like to end on that story because you never know.
That's a great fake story.
And to end, I'm going to play a little bit of My Boyfriend Doesn't Speak for Me Anymore. This is a Rachel Womack song. Play a little bit of this.
Boyfriend doesn't speak for me anymore.
Who's this about?
My ex. My boyfriend gets so much crap for this song.
Your current boyfriend?
Yes.
The boyfriend you have now gets
the
crap.
Boyfriend I have now. Yeah. He gets a lot of crap for this song, but he's so easygoing about it. He's like, oh yeah, oh, you know.
What's your boyfriend now do? Is he music?
He is in school at Trevecca.
Oh no,
down in downtown Nashville.
Yeah. To do what? Is he gonna treat you right? And
he. Yes.
Go ahead.
He treats me like a queen.
All right.
He's so kind. And
I know you mean that.
He's from Montana, which is the reason that I said the mountains, because last year I went with him to Glacier National Park, right outside of his hometown, and just it blew my mind because I'd never seen mountains before. That was the first time ever. So I've got a great one.
All right. And I know you mean it because you told me that before we even came up here.
Yes.
So, okay. Rachel Womack, we've done an hour. Is this the longest interview you've ever done?
Yes.
And you did pretty good.
Thank you. I use my tools.
She got a new toolkit before the interview.
Thank you, Bobby.
I was talking to her before, and she was like, Rachel was like, I'm not that witty. And I was like, it's okay if you're not funny. She goes, no, I'm funny.
I know.
She goes, I'm just not that witty. And I was like, don't focus on things that you're not. Like, really find your strength. And she was like, okay,
we're focusing on my strengths.
That's right. All right.
Yes.
Rachel Womack, WAMMACK, because I bet you everybody's like, how do you say your name?
Yep, Womack.
Rachel.
Thank y'all so much.
To be fair, it does look like Womack.
It does. It looks like Walmart. Whatever. Rachel, I don't mind.
Rachel Womack.
If you say it wrong, I'll still be your friend.
Stream. Download. Go buy a ticket and watch her play if she's ever anywhere near you. And that is all for this time. Class
yes.
of 2019.
See
Rachel
y'all
Womack.
In the festivals this summer.
Are you playing Firefest this year? Watch it. Then let me know. All right. Episode 153. Bye, guys.